Megan. Everything in my life has changed dramatically since I stopped picking and choosing which parts of the Bible I would follow. I stopped saying, I'm going to do this by the book, but I'm going to do that over there the way I want to do it. When I stopped that and I focused on the hardest thing, which is sex, I literally watched everything in my life and career change.
Waiting for sex isn't easy. But no important thing is ever easy. It's a sacrifice, but a worthwhile one. We took some teasing about things like our clear skin and how wild our honeymoon must have been. But it was worth it. Finally enjoying sex with each other after our marriage was incredible. But it was also the consummation of something holy. Wise waiting. Influential philosopher St. Thomas Aquinas said, "A person is said to be patient because he acts in a praiseworthy manner by enduring things which hurt him here and now and is not unduly saddened by them. We consider patience a virtue and impatience a vice. But why? In part, it's because a patient disposition tends to give us a healthier perspective on the ups and downs of daily living. Because we're not expecting everything to come our way overnight, we keep the big picture in mind. We're less likely to become angry or depressed at life's trivial setbacks. The impatient person can't understand why everything isn't working out as planned, and is more likely to react to a minor misfortune by becoming frustrated, giving up, or doing something foolish. Celibacy versus abstinence. Before we move on, we need to draw a clear distinction between celibacy and abstinence. Most people think they're the same thing. They're not. Abstinence is simply refraining from sex. It's the absence of something with no greater meaning behind it. To us, celibacy is refraining from sex because of a vow or faith. It's abstinence with a purpose. You might abstain from sex involuntarily because you're not in a relationship. Celibacy is never involuntary. It's always the result of a conscious, deliberate choice. That's an important distinction. In The Wait, we're going to talk about celibacy because to us, celibacy is something you go into with your eyes open, fully expecting to gain something from the experience. It's about saying, I'm becoming. On the other hand, in our culture, abstinence is something grudging, something forced upon young people, for example, by well-meaning parents or well-meaning ministries. It's about saying, you will not. But there's not always purpose or learning associated with it. That can be dangerous. Consider the news story in the spring of 2015 about a small high school in Texas with an abstinence-only sex education program that experienced a widespread outbreak of chlamydia, a sexually transmitted infection. That's one tiny piece of proof that just saying no to sex or pretending the sex drive doesn't exist isn't an adequate defense against pregnancy, disease, or worse. When we talk about celibacy, the last thing we're doing is telling you to ignore sex. Just the opposite. We're suggesting that you acknowledge its power and your own desire. That way, if you choose to go without sex, you'll do so with your eyes open, understanding the realities and risks of having sex and not having it. Celibacy and the wait complement each other. The energy to change everything. Despite all those positives, type A personalities often see the wait as disempowering or fatalistic. So many times we hear self-help tropes like, go for what you want in life, and successful people make things happen. Unsuccessful people watch things happen. That sort of one-size-fits-all wisdom sounds enticing until you realize that it could possibly leave God completely out of the picture. For some scriptural perspective, Look at Isaiah chapter 40, verses 30 through 31, NASB, which reads, "Though youths grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary." Yes, even those vigorous young men and women, so impatient and confident in their ability to choose the right person or right path, will stumble and wear out without God's guidance to give them strength. Running through love's maze, chasing one bad relationship after another, it all discourages not just the body, but also the spirit. The word discourage says it, a loss of courage. After a while, you don't have the fortitude to face another first date or relationship. It's exhausting. On the other hand, showing some restraint and letting God reveal your next step is like plugging into an emotional and spiritual power plant. As the verse says, you can run and not get tired. You're not just free of the maze, but free of the unspoken mandate that you must find your life's partner and life's purpose right now. You're on nobody's schedule but your own, and you have God to help you figure out what to do next. In fact, the same engine that drives the best stories also gives the weight its power. We're professionals with years working in the entertainment business, and we know that the key to any good movie is tension. It doesn't matter if you're waiting for two characters to share their first kiss, or holding your breath while the heroine tries to escape from the serial killer. No matter the genre of film, what moves the story is the tension between what the main character wants and the obstacles he or she must overcome to get it. The wait works the same way. It takes the tension that exists between instant and delayed gratification and turns it into energy. In the Bible, giving in to the temptations of instant gratification inevitably leads to ruin. See Eden, Garden of. Delayed gratification, on the other hand, leads to fidelity and reward. See the story of Joseph. Waiting for what you want floods your life with potential energy. Delayed gratification and marshmallows. One memorable piece of evidence for the benefits of delayed gratification comes from what's become known as the famous Stanford Marshmallow Experiment. In the 1960s, a Stanford University professor named Walter Mischel started experimenting with hundreds of children around 4 and 5 years old to see how long they could delay their own gratification. In the experiment, a researcher brought each child into a private room one at a time and sat down across a table from him or her. On the table, he placed a marshmallow. Then he told each child that he would leave the room for 15 minutes. If the child did not eat the marshmallow during the time that the researcher was gone, he or she would get a second marshmallow when the researcher came back. If the child ate the marshmallow, he or she wouldn't get any more. As you might expect, most of the kids ate their marshmallows. A few didn't. But the interesting part of the study came as the researchers followed the kids over the next 40 years as they grew into adults. What the study showed was that the kids who were able to delay gratification were more successful in almost every area of life. Reduced rates of obesity, better social skills, higher SAT scores, you name it. They were simply better at life than the kids who gave in to instant gratification. If you've never been disciplined enough to deny yourself short-term pleasure in favor of the big picture, the wait is your chance to develop this skill as an adult, something most people cannot do. Doing so can increase your chances of being successful in the parts of your life that matter most, from your career to your relationships. Being selective makes you more desirable. Another big plus to delaying gratification and reining in your dating life is that the less available you are, the more fascinating you become. We live in a culture where most people hurl themselves blindly into the path of every possible relationship. In that world, who's most interesting and desirable? The person who has the confidence not to date every warm body that comes along, but instead is selective. Just as tension powers the action in the movies, it will do the same for you. You may be dating and deciding to wait for the first time. You may be single and already waiting, on purpose or because you have no other choice, but becoming discouraged. Either way, have hope. The wait will work for you. Ultimately, if your desire to please God is greater than your desire to please yourself, and even the person you may be dating, then God will bring you boundless blessings. Tether your will to wait to your desire to please God, and He will bless you and honor your commitment in ways that will surprise you and improve your life. The wait and career. Your career is another area where you might be chomping at the bit to get going, get climbing that ladder, and get the corner office. But you have only so much control. There are politics, the realities of advancement within an organization, and issues of training and education to deal with. Plus, it's hard to know what you should really do with your life. Waiting can be a great career strategy because, believe it or not, God honors your sacrifice. And let's face it, the decision to deny yourself and not have sex is a sacrifice. The two of us have witnessed firsthand how God has blessed our careers because we chose to honor Him in our relationship. As you practice the wait, you can see a great acceleration and advancement in your purpose and career. Chapter 2. Getting what you really want. Hint, it isn't sex. Happiness is pleasure without regret. Leo Tolstoy. Asking anyone to give up sex is asking a lot. We know that. We're asking you to shut down a fundamental part of what makes you human, and it's not easy. Change is always difficult, which is why people so often retreat into the familiar, even when the familiar is awful and depressing. That's why we get back together with our exes, even if things ended the last time in screaming and broken glass. It's why we go out with the same friends, even when we know they bring out the worst in us. We crave familiarity, and the wait asks you to dive into unfamiliar territory. But that's what makes it such a powerful force for change. Becoming the best version of yourself. Millions of us are in pain. God designed sex and love to be a power combination in marriage. However, when sex and love don't end in marriage, which describes the outcome of most sexual flings and love affairs, the result is oftentimes painful. When you're with someone God doesn't intend for you, pain of some sort is usually inevitable. Many of us still bear the wounds and the sorrow from those lost loves or flings. But do we give ourselves time to heal? No, not typically. Suffering from post-traumatic relationship disorder, we take the only prescription we know. We bury the feelings that we aren't ready to deal with, go into denial mode, and look for escape in other sexual relationships. But we need time to really process the pain we've gone through and properly heal so that we don't make the same mistakes again. Reason number one to practice the wait. It's a time to heal when the only one who matters is you. Celibacy is the heart and soul of the wait because control over this area of instant gratification empowers you to have control over so many other areas in your life. The same ones that may have led to a repetitive pattern of heartbreak, loneliness, wasted money, and wasted time. When we base our actions on that, I want what I want when I want it drive, we don't see clearly. We make decisions based on lust, greed, envy, or fear, and more often than not, such choices cause destruction in our lives. Sometimes the harm is temporary, as in a bad breakup that's painful for a few weeks but survivable. Other times, the damage is permanent, such as when quick decisions results in disease, depression, or an unplanned pregnancy and changes the course of our lives forever. Speaking of disease, we'd be remiss if we didn't highlight the serious problem of sexually transmitted diseases, STDs. Both young men and young women are heavily affected by STDs, but young women face the most serious long-term health consequences. It is estimated that undiagnosed STDs cause 24,000 women to become infertile each year. Center for Disease Control, December 2014. African Americans are the racial ethnic group most affected by HIV. Center for Disease Control, HIV/AIDS. The rate of new HIV infection in African Americans is 8 times that of whites based on population size. Center for Disease Control, HIV/AIDS. African Americans accounted for an estimated 44% of all new HIV infections among adults and adolescents aged 13 years or older in 2010, despite representing only 12% of the U.S. population. Considering the smaller size of the African American population in the United States, this represents a population rate that is 8 times that of whites overall. Center for Disease Control, HIV/AIDS. In 2010, African American women accounted for 6,100, 29% of the estimated new HIV infections among all adult and adolescent African Americans. This number represents a decrease of 21% since 2008. Most new HIV infections among African American women, 87%, 5,300, are attributed to heterosexual contact. The estimated rate of new HIV infections for African American women, 38.1, 100,000 population, was 20 times that of white women and almost 5 times that of Hispanic Latino women. Center for Disease Control, HIV/AIDS. When we're focused primarily on satisfying our immediate desires, we're preventing ourselves from being the best people we can be. And one of the key elements of being the best people we can be is to be the healthiest person we can be. The short-term results of instant gratification might be fun, but in the long term, we often damage our health and ourselves. Not to mention we can become like addicts chasing the next high. The weight helps put reason and discernment back in charge. But it doesn't stop there. Waiting for sex is a powerful tool for taking control of our impulses and creating positive habits. The weight applies to every area of romantic life and relationships, from whom we choose to date to when to get serious. In all these areas, people tend to try to make things happen. We force the issue. We delude ourselves into thinking that we alone can order the universe to our liking if we just have the right look, income, or position. The weight reminds us that while we have the power of choice, much of what happens in our life is still subject to God's control. Our hands are on the wheel, but so are God's. We can steer with Him because we do have control over our choices, our habits, and how we use the gifts we've been given. But if we try to take over, we usually find ourselves in a head-on collision with something or someone that God was trying to steer us away from. Practicing the wait is a chance to heal, clear your head, do some important self-assessment, and position yourself to receive peace, love, and wisdom. It's an opportunity to take a break from the frantic feeling that you have to make things happen, or they won't happen at all. The wait is about having faith that God is working on your behalf to bring you the right blessings at the right time. It's also about recognizing that all the time you spend or have spent chasing booty actually works against you and your desire to improve yourself in body, mind, and spirit. The wait is that critical period between wanting and getting. It's when you quiet your mind and trust God, relieved of the pressure to live the perfect life. Whew, you're free to reinvent yourself as the person you've always aspired to be, the person he intends you to be. For some people, that means taking classes and working out. For others, it means reading scripture and ridding themselves of toxic relationships. While waiting, you need to trust more than ever before that God's got your back. Then start making choices for your life that show you have your own back too. Even for people with strong faith, this isn't always easy. We ache to find our life partners, to find that person who can fall in love with us and be loved by us. So we push the issue. We date everyone attractive who crosses our path without employing some critical thinking or prayer to help us determine if this is someone worthy of our time. We stay in relationships that are way past their sell-by date. We say yes to quick marriages, and then end up saying yes to quick divorces. It's not making us any happier. It's not making us any wealthier. In fact, it's making us more cynical, and sometimes loading us up with heavy emotional baggage that we'll need to unpack years down the road. In the midst of all this pain and frustration, we can begin to think that finding real love isn't possible. Maybe settling for a series of hookups is the best we can hope for from life. However, cynicism doesn't stop us from yearning desperately for something more, for connection to each other and to God. We don't have to give in to cynicism. Sometimes, you can't find what you desire most. Sometimes, it has to find you. The wait is one of the most powerful tools you'll ever have for getting what you really want out of life, because it creates the path for you to become the best version of yourself. When this happens, getting what you want most out of life, the love of your life, a wonderful family, a prosperous career, and a meaningful life's purpose, becomes truly possible. You grow into someone of greater wisdom, discernment, self-awareness, compassion, and empathy. And it's incredible how everything falls into place. It's as though God was always just around the corner, waiting to bless you when you found your way onto the right path. Before we dated. When the two of us met in 2007, we may not have felt anxiety over how our lives were progressing, but we didn't grasp the significance of what God was doing either. We were just two people in the entertainment industry, and we both thought that we had a pretty good handle on what was coming our way. God knew better. He was bringing us together carefully, and it took us both a while to acknowledge that there was more going on than we could grasp. But in due time, we both had an idea that something bigger might be at work.
Megan. I'm passionate about doing films with a spiritual heartbeat. I did this independent film called Miles from Home about a kid who ends up on the street because his mother is strung out on drugs and his father's not in the picture. My character was quirky and offbeat and a strong Christian. She meets this kid and doesn't know that he's fallen into the world of prostitution and they fall in love. By the end of the film, he chooses life. He decides to stop going down a path of destruction and be with this girl. Devon saw the film and said, "Wow, I didn't know she was such a good actress." Around this same time, a mutual friend of ours, Benji, was trying to set up a general meeting for me with Devon. Devon spoke with Evan, my manager, about the meeting. He was excited to meet me because he had just seen Miles from Home. I'll never forget when I first walked in. Immediately, I thought he was very attractive, but I had a boyfriend at the time. We had a great meeting, and he was enthusiastic about helping me with my career. He said, Whatever you need, I'm on your team. And that was the beginning of our friendship.
Devon. Fast forward to December 2009. Megan had made a lot of movies for Sony because Clint Culpepper, the head of Screen Gems, a division of Sony Pictures, really liked her. She was on the Sony Pictures lot, the same lot I worked on quite often to go to meetings, recording dialogue for films like Stomp the Yard, things like that. One day, I just happened to be on the lot on Main Street when she came by in the golf cart that security uses to take talent around. As she was driving by, she asked me to jump on, and on the way to the parking lot, she told me about a new trailer for a new movie she had just finished producing and starring in called Video Girl. I told her I'd love to see it, so Lee, the guy driving the cart, dropped us at her car, and she gave me the DVD. Part of me was thinking, wow, this is Megan Good. I can't believe it. This is cool. But another part of me was saying, no, don't let your mind go there. This is not reality. I took the trailer from her and she left. Later on, I watched the trailer and I liked it. I sent it back to her along with an email about how much I enjoyed it. And then that was it. We didn't have any more interaction until over a year later when we started casting Jumping the Broom. Starting with being on location for Jumping the Broom, the first chance we'd had to spend substantial time together, it was clear to both of us that maybe there was a spark and some chemistry between us. But there were also all manner of doubts, thought processes, and obstacles that neither of us could have known the other was dealing with. So if, instead of paying full attention to God's direction and biding our time, we had surrendered to the attraction and jumped into an on-location romance, what would have happened? The odds are, we wouldn't be married today.
Megan. I was in the fourth year of a relationship that had become destructive. I had been praying, Lord, what do you want me to do? I want to be with this person, but things are emotionally abusive and dysfunctional on both sides. Am I supposed to stick it out and hope things get better? The Lord told me, just wait. Shortly after that, I went off to start filming Jumping the Broom in Nova Scotia. I would see Devon on the set and think, that's the type of guy I wish I could be with. He has a great heart, he's funny, and he loves the Lord. Right off the bat, I felt like we were kindred spirits. But we kept it strictly platonic and professional. After I left, I felt in my spirit it was time to end the relationship I was in. Then I said to the Lord, okay, now what? The Lord answered, work on yourself. Well, it wasn't pretty. For the next few months, I was self-destructive, drinking, partying hard, and angry that I had spent so much time in a toxic situation. I wasn't in a good space. I needed time to heal. I definitely wasn't thinking about getting into another relationship.
Devon. When I met Megan, I was already in a relationship. Funny as it sounds to say now, I also didn't want to date an actress. I just didn't think it would be the right life and career fit. When we started working on Jumping the Broom, she was one of the first people at the hotel when I checked in. While we were downstairs in the lobby making small talk, I saw a cigarette in her hand. She had a toothbrush with her, too, because she didn't want the smoking to stain her teeth. I was floored. I was thinking, how in the world can someone this beautiful be a smoker? Later, I would find out that she also liked to drink. Like, really drink. I don't drink, but I dated people who drank. However, I had never dated anyone who smoked. But it wasn't my worry because at the time I wasn't thinking about us ever dating. We just had a good professional relationship. So while we hung out on the set and went out a few times with the cast and crew, we were cordial, and that was all. I knew there was a lot going on with her, but I didn't know anything about her relationship outside of what was in the press. Eventually, after the movie wrapped, I went back to L.A., and that was that. As far as we were concerned, We were both making prudent decisions based on the circumstances in our lives. But with God, nothing is ever that simple. Making sure that each of us ends up with the people we are meant to be with is important to the Lord. So he takes his time making sure that the circumstances are right. We had no idea at the time that by just living our lives and doing our best to honor our commitments, God was putting us on a love collision course. On our own, we both discovered something crucial. Only by deliberately refusing to repeat past relationship mistakes could we gain the clarity and perspective we needed to understand what we wanted, what we needed to do differently, and what God had in mind for us. Choosing to steer clear of personal entanglement in favor of personal growth gave us both what we needed to come together when we were truly ready and create something that's been blessed and amazing. Wise waiting. Some of the world's greatest success stories are about people who knew that nothing they did could influence events in their favor, so they chose to wait for conditions to shift. One of the best examples from Scripture is the story of the Exodus, when God liberated the Hebrews from slavery. Unable to match the might of the Egyptians, Moses had to wait years for conditions to change and for God to ordain the right time to bring about change. In The Art of War, Sun Tzu wrote about the power of patience in allowing the opposition to defeat itself. He who is prudent and lies in wait for an enemy who is not will be victorious. When no action other than preparation will deliver the result you're striving for, being patient and allowing conditions to change can get the best results. There are times to take aggressive action, yet they will usually be preceded by a strong period of waiting. How the wait improved our lives. Even back then, though we hadn't yet developed the concept of the wait, we were practicing its precepts. We were more concerned with being obedient to God than with following some temporary blip of sexual excitement. We were questioning and cautious about each other, resolving to watch and see what would happen next. We were very aware of the mistakes we had made in past relationships and determined not to repeat them. So we played it cool. We didn't let our interest distract us from bigger things in our lives at the time. That pattern would play out over and over as we kept circling each other. Circumstances would force us into proximity with each other, where our raw chemistry and interest in each other's personality and intelligence would flow. But we kept backing off, listening to God and saying, "Wait, let's see how this plays out." Obviously, this approach paid big rewards. Our marriage is a powerful, mutually respectful relationship. Many people we meet ask us time and again for our secret to happiness. We know how very much God has blessed us, but that wouldn't have happened without the wait. Practicing it has improved our lives in more ways than we can count. We're more patient. We've always been ambitious people, but our experience waiting and watching God bring us together has taught us the incredible virtue of patience. There are some things that we can't make happen. Other things will happen, but only in their own time when certain conditions have been met. We're sure of that now. And our greater patience has helped us land the right career opportunities, wait for the right time to buy a house, and so much more. We feel like we see a big picture of blessings that are available to everybody, but not everybody takes time to see it. We're free to be ourselves. Dating is like putting on your church clothes, and if you don't ever let someone know your less than perfect side before you get married, you could spend your entire life wearing those clothes, afraid to be yourself. We're not worried about that. We practice the wait, learning about each other in every way. We spent more time on dates talking about what we liked, didn't like, were offended by, you name it. We've seen each other at our weirdest, silliest, most ornery and disagreeable, most vulnerable, and most hurtful. And guess what? We've both made the decision to love the whole package. That means we both have a safe place where we can be ourselves without judgment. It's a wonderful space to live in. We have a home within a home. We both can work incredibly long hours in demanding professions. Whether you're acting or producing, shooting a film or television show can mean months of 14-hour days on location. That means one of us, and sometimes both of us, is often coming home drained, utterly dry. Don't get us wrong. We know how blessed we are to do what we do. But it can be exhausting. And when our wells are dry, we have each other to fill them up. We have some place to go, and someone to go to that is ours, our haven, our center of peace. Home is about the person more than the place. Our marriage is our home, and it fills us back up when the world drains us. We've made peace with the past. Megan in particular had some demons from her past relationships, but we both bore scars from breakups and poor choices. The worst thing about past pain is that it makes you doubt your wisdom to make sound choices. As we confronted our demons, we decided to let go of the guilt of previous mistakes we've made in relationships. We decided not to allow our past to control our future. And practicing the wait helped us release a lot of baggage. The wait and finances. Oh, that crazy consumer culture. We fuel a trillion-dollar economy because we just can't help instantly gratifying our insatiable desires for new cars, shoes, and flat-screen televisions the size of NYC. It's no wonder that Americans save only a small percentage of our incomes. Waiting is a powerful principle when it comes to your money. More to the point, to spending less of it and saving more. If you follow the precepts, it's pretty simple. Don't give in to your hunger for a shiny new toy. Save that money instead for the purchases that will provide for your future, like a home, an IRA, or 401k. Or just stick it in a savings account so that in 5 years, you can take your wait-met spouse on the honeymoon of a lifetime. There's nothing too complicated here. The wait and money means focusing on long-term versus short-term goals. Want to buy a house? Saving is a must. That doesn't mean you can't still eat out and have nice things, but you might have to do that more selectively than before. Decide what's important and manage your money accordingly. Grabbing hold of the life you want. One of the most important reasons people choose to delay gratification is also the simplest. It helps us get what we want. Successful dieters resist the temptation to overeat because they like seeing a slimmer reflection, not because they love watching what they eat all day long. People who sacrifice to save cushy retirement nest eggs do it mostly because they want to have money in their older years, not because they don't have a desire to spend money. Our desires are powerful drivers of our decision-making process, which helps or hinders us from getting what we want most. The two of us are not naive. The promise of becoming the person God wants you to be isn't necessarily enough to change behavior by itself, particularly when it comes to love and sex, areas where we humans are prone to stepping on our own toes. If you want to wait to date, have sex, get married, or do anything else purely out of deep religious or moral conviction, we admire and respect that. But the desire to wait is different from the ability to wait, and it's a lot easier to remain celibate and delay gratification if you know you're doing it, because it brings concrete benefits. The wait reprograms your pleasure software. Psychologists, anthropologists, and others have studied self-control and delayed gratification for years. They found that the ability to say no to immediate short-term pleasures in favor of lasting ones down the line is linked to better mental and physical health, greater academic success, and more refined social abilities. Several leading clinical psychologists call self-control the master virtue because people who exhibit a high degree of it also feel better, have higher self-esteem, and deal with anger and other negative feelings more productively. Why does delaying gratification make us better people? Sigmund Freud pointed to the ego's ability to strike a bargain between the id, the let's get it on part of the mind, and the superego, the center of principle and morality. But that still doesn't explain the reason why the weight is such a powerful tool for getting what you want. We believe we have the answer, and it's all about how our minds and bodies are programmed to see pleasure. Every day is a contest between pleasures of the flesh and of the spirit. Fleshly pleasures are about immediate satisfaction of our desires through things like food, sex, spending money, feeling superior to other people, and so on. We call these pleasures C. Short-term external experiences. You might have noticed that C have a lot in common with addictive behaviors. People get addicted to spending money, gambling, sex, and food. These quick-fix experiences that give us instant gratification can also control our behavior and lead us into destructive choices. Spiritual pleasures, on the other hand, evoke our highest qualities, the ones that move us to do the will of God and align us with who He wants us to be. Generosity, discipline, fidelity, compassion, self-sacrifice, acting ethically and honestly. These are some of the pleasures that we call LIP, long-term internal processes. Cultivating these qualities often means delaying gratification and waiting for results. For example, it can take months to see the weight loss that comes from being disciplined about exercise and diet. The process affects us mostly in our minds and spirits and leads to positive change and personal growth. When we do the right thing or care for others before ourselves, we get a soul-deep sense of pleasure and accomplishment that's nothing like the superficial pleasures of the flesh. Emotionally and spiritually healthy people maintain a good balance between fleshly and spiritual pleasures. They date widely, but don't sleep around. They enjoy material comforts, but don't overspend. They live balanced lives by putting God first and still finding ways to enjoy the blessings God has placed in this world. The trouble is, our culture works 24/7 to tell us that fleshly pleasure, instant gratification, is the better way to live. Companies make billions of dollars convincing us that we need, no, deserve, food, music, sex, new clothing, high-end technology, and incredible experiences all the time. We've become programmed to favor the flesh over the spirit. This harms us in more ways than we can count. The continuous, unbalanced practice of choosing short-term pleasures blinds us, corrupts our willpower, and drives choices that ultimately can destroy our lives. For example, we have unprotected sex with people we barely know, abuse alcohol or drugs and call it fun, stay in dysfunctional relationships and call it love, and spend more money than we have and call it prosperity. In a nutshell, choosing the flesh over the spirit can be dangerously self-destructive. In Scripture, it says, "Those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on what the flesh desires, but those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. The mind governed by the flesh is death, but the mind governed by the Spirit is life and peace. The mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Those who are in the realm of the flesh cannot please God." Romans chapter 8, verses 5 through 8. NIV. The greatest benefit of the wait is that it reprograms us to find greater pleasure in choices that help us live according to the Spirit. That is, aligning our spirit with God's. This serves our long-term mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Take us as an example. By choosing to wait and not pursue a physical relationship before marriage, we were able to appreciate the pleasure that came with listening to God, learning about ourselves, and breaking old patterns. The current success we experience in our marriage is directly related to the years we spent individually trying to find the balance between the flesh and the spirit. When you choose to deny the flesh in favor of the spirit, you'll be surprised to find that doing things in this way feels really good, and that giving in to the needs of the flesh starts to feel less desirable. Even better, the more you derive pleasure from spirit-led decisions that make you stronger and more self-aware, the better choices you'll make in your personal and professional life. You'll get off the treadmill of past mistakes and get on the elliptical of current and future success. You'll take big strides toward becoming the person you've always wanted to be. Lip service. The essence of the wait is developing the ability to derive more pleasure and peace from delaying gratification than you do from giving in to the hunger for instant gratification. By encouraging your spiritual development, you will make choices that reward you over the long term and improve your happiness in every area of your life. What kind of choices can bring you greater pleasure and satisfaction than quick-fix pleasures of the flesh? Here are some examples. Maintaining a disciplined program of fitness, budgeting and saving money, praying and meditating consistently, being celibate, which eliminates distractions and improves vision, clarity, and discernment, helping others in need, mentoring and giving back, finding a church community that can help nurture you and give you support. Anytime you act with morality, restraint, good character, or strong discipline, when you do things that enhance instead of corrupt your spirit, you will enjoy tremendous peace, pride, and personal satisfaction. That's the kind of pleasure that lasts and will fuel long-term success. It puts you back in control. Every time you give yourself to someone before marriage, you give them your power. It's time to take your power back. It's time to take control of your decisions, which is where the real power lies. Many times, the waiting periods in life come to us not by our own choice. Circumstances like a breakup or job loss force them on us. Instead of using these periods as opportunities to do the work we've needed to do, we use these periods to complain, throw a self-pity party, and spiral into depression. One of the many goals of the wait is to motivate you to change your thinking about unexpected seasons, to use periods of active waiting to sculpt your life into the shape you want. It's true that God is the only one who knows the right time for a person or opportunity to appear in your life. However, you have control over how you prepare before that person or opportunity arrives and how you respond afterward. God gives us all the raw material we will ever need to become the person He wants us to become. But it's up to us to do the cutting and polishing so that the true beauty and light of our character and God-intended destiny emerges. With the wait, you can accelerate the process of growth and attract good outcomes into your life by taking control of your choices. Of course, this also means that you must resist the temptation to sit around and complain that God isn't blessing you. That's a deadly trap that will deplete your energy and divert your focus. Complaining is a liability to be avoided at all costs. From the perspective of the wait, the time when nothing appears to be happening becomes your personal self-development laboratory. You can prepare for things to come, asking key questions and reflecting on what you've done wrong in the past so you can do things right in the future. It's the time to ask some of the most challenging questions you'll ever confront. What's likely to happen? And how can I be ready? What part did I play in the failure of my last relationship or opportunity? What negative patterns do I see myself repeating over and over? Am I pursuing opportunities that please my flesh over my spirit? What type am I attracted to? Am I attracted to people who aren't right for me? What emotions have sabotaged my relationships? Rage, depression, revenge? What traumas have I not worked through yet? Betrayal? Evaluating your traumatic relationship ups and downs productively is constructive action. Set aside the victim mentality, which makes you believe you are the victim of your past relationships gone wrong. It does nothing but rob you of control and of the privilege of taking responsibility for your part. Take your power back. By doing what needs to be done to avoid past mistakes, change your cell number, join a new gym, take an overdue vacation to clear your head, whatever, you prepare yourself for the incredible future God has in store for you.
Megan. Actively deciding to wait was not about me finding my guy. It was about the fact that some of the relationships I had been in were destructive to who I was as a human being and to who I wanted to be in God. I played a huge role in this as well. I knew better. Everything was in disarray, and I needed to let God put the pieces back together. It was time for me to not be stagnant in my growth, and to choose to take my relationship with God deeper and closer.
Devon, when we're distracted by our drama, we're not doing the work that God is calling us to do. We're not giving him what he needs to make things happen. For instance, I couldn't make jumping the broom come to be on my own, but I could open myself to God's hand on my life. So I looked for projects with a larger purpose behind them. When jumping the broom came along, I said, "There's something about this film. I'm going to do what I can to get it made." I didn't worry that I would only have a small budget to make the film. I approached the opportunity from a place of faith and obedience to God, and with the belief that making this movie was key to my preparation to one day become a producer. I had no idea that God would ultimately use the film to set up and prepare me for my life with Megan. There's great power in cooling down, stepping back, looking at things with a clear head, and most important, breaking the cycle of repeated mistakes. You gain the perspective to make preparations that will lead to the outcomes you want, and you gain control during periods of life that might seem uncontrollable. It pulls the right people to you. Self-control